is the Next Trip Podcast with aviation insiders Doug and Drew. Together, with more than 40 years of industry experience, they are creating a network for other av geeks and travel enthusiasts to obsess about all things aviation. All thoughts and opinions are their own.
G'day, welcome to Boarding Pass 99. Drew, 99.
No, can you believe that?
I know, this
so
is nuts.
Fast.
Yeah, I can't believe it. Welcome to Boarding Pass 99, operating on October 18th, 2021. This is Doug, and I'm here with my fellow industry insider, Drew. We're two av geeks creating a network for airline, airplane, airport, and travel enthusiasts to obsess about all things aviation. Drew, how was your week?
It was great. It was a nice, calm week. Not a lot of drama. We had ATC and weather issues in Florida with thunderstorms, and the Jacksonville Center had a staffing issue momentarily. We can save that because that comes back later on in this episode.
Yeah, I want to talk about that extensively.
Yeah. And another thing that's going to come back is your first flight, which everyone's excited to hear about. This kind of has to do with that because, Doug, the bookings are rising, and they're rising very quickly because the word on the street was they were bad, right?
Yeah.
But people are booking last minute. And remember when you got off the plane with your training captain? And I was like, oh, yeah, we're in this downturn. And we couldn't even make it through the concourse.
We walk up into the concourse and it's absolutely packed to the point where I suggested, because we were trying to figure out food on our stop. And I was like, let's just go over to the A terminal because it's probably, you know, not hub over there. I was like, it's going to be less crowded. But then the bank went out and it was fine. But yeah, I mean, looking at the TSA numbers, Drew, I flew Friday through Monday.
Mm-hmm.
Friday, Sunday, Monday were some of the busiest days in the last 18 months.
I mean, it was a holiday weekend, but no one expected it to be. And you were there during our noon bank, which is our smaller bank.
Yeah.
And it was packed in there.
It was absolutely packed. Yeah.
Yeah, it was great. And then what happened when you were leaving Nashville?
Oversold.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, I mean, they were offering $1,400. My captain was like, you know, I kind of want to take that. Yeah.
I know. Yeah. So people don't want to get off because they have their leisure plans and they're serious about going places. Yeah. So that's really good news. So bookings are rising. We talk a lot about pilot hiring. Airlines are hiring all over the place. So we're hiring a lot of people for customer service, a lot of people for ramp, and we're going to be hiring two or three people from my department. So
good.
Yes. So this weekend we were interviewing. We interviewed 10 people. Really good interviews, really good candidates. So this weekend we're making a decision who we'll choose. It's really hard.
Yeah.
But that's good that it's hard. There's a lot of good people. And there's a lot of movement within the companies because there's openings again. So people are finding their place, you know, wherever they may land within our company and other companies. So lots of opportunity right now.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you've had some job openings that came up that you could possibly move to. There's so much movement on the pilot side. This is crazy. Since I was hired in July, 3 months ago, not that long, I'm already 75% on my airplane in my base, meaning that I'm three quarters of the way up the seniority list already. Three months in, and I just flew my first trip, which is crazy to think
about. That is crazy. Yeah, you just flew your first trip, and you were telling me you had, 600 pilots beneath you right now for seniority?
Already. Mm-hmm. Not on my airplane necessarily or at my base, but just company-wide. Yeah, which is nuts. Yeah.
One real thing about our week, just this last couple of weeks ago, Doug, we went back to four banks, and that is what we had pre-COVID. So it's back to the future. It's not exactly the same as 2019, but you know, you mentioned this and it's a good point. 2019 was a gangbuster year. So to compare everything to 2019 is not really realistic. We should compare it to 2018.
Yeah, because it was a record-breaking year. 2017, 2018 are the metrics. I think I actually mentioned probably 15 or 16 as well. We need to compare it to all those years, but unfortunately, TSA data doesn't go back that far. But all of the quarterly and annual reports do. And you know, I've got my spreadsheet and I gonculate everything. So we'll be talking about that in a couple of weeks.
I got to mention something funny that we were with our little chat group, our little AvGeek chat group. So you were sending, you're starting to track your flights.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
You guys.
I've been a crew member on 12 flights, my 4 jump seat, and my 8 pilot flights.
And so I mean that's realistic because those are your airline pilot flights, right? You're starting to track them, which is cool.
Yeah.
But then some of our other friends were tracking just their flights in general, right? And they had some arrows going here and there. So I'm like, I've been working for the airline since 1989. And I'm like, all right, here's mine. And I just send you guys a route map of a major airline.
A picture from like the in-flight magazine.
Here's mine. And there's so many lines, you can't even see the map. To be honest, I don't think it's much different than that.
No, I doubt it. And I mean, you've launched thousands, if not millions of flights in your career. No joke. I mean, saying a million flights is probably not that far from an exaggeration. As far as working them.
Well, yeah. And then I don't know if you'll be one of these people, but once you join the airlines, most people generally stop tracking their flights because it's so much.
I will. Cause I, my dad and I think we talked about this last year sometime. When I was in probably junior high, my dad and I sat down for an entire weekend and we went back to when I was born and we pieced together every single flight that we did. Best guess on what the airplane type was. He knew some of them. And he was actually, my dad is, I feel like I get my spreadsheet stuff
probably
a bit from my dad. He was able to go back and look at his Northwest freaking flyer records from the year that I was born on all of the flights that he did, because they used to mail out at the end of the year. This is what you flew this year. These are the flight numbers. These are the miles. This is the airplane type.
He's tracked all of his flights.
He doesn't track them, but he keeps his annual freaking flyer statements. Yeah. Okay. So we were able to piece it together. I was probably 12, 13. Put it in a spreadsheet, and Drew, I have tracked every single flight since then, including all my pilot flights, and I already have added this trip onto it. So I see what you're saying, but when I have a couple days off after a trip, it took me 10 minutes to just throw it in the spreadsheet, you know?
Okay. All right. Well, no, this is great, because you know, if we take trips together and I can't remember anything,
I've got everything. I've got all the data. Yeah.
Yeah. I even asked you, what was that 787-10 tail number we flew? Because I keep looking for that, and you had it. No, that's great. Okay. Before we go on, I want to go back. I had such a fun time recording our episode with Lara.
I did too. That was a blast. And we've gotten a lot of really good responses from that episode.
She was a natural. Lara, you know, I hope you're listening. I know you're a regular listener. We really enjoyed having you. And how long was the edit for that episode? How difficult was the edit?
Probably. how long was the episode? About an hour? It was probably 2 hours, which is a relatively short edit.
Right. And you put in the add-ons. What is that at the end? The bloopers?
The outtakes. Yeah.
The outtakes. I think that was it.
Yeah.
It was probably
I don't even remember what the outtake was, but yeah. No, it was an easy edit for sure.
But of course you left in the part where I said uncertitude for uncertainty. Leaving that in.
I tried cutting it, but there were too many strung out words that it would have sounded bad and whatever. Yeah. It's all out of love. Don't worry about it.
Well, everyone stay tuned, because we got positive feedback, as you said, about that episode, but we got some negative feedback too.
Yeah.
We'll
share that at the end. Yeah.
All right, Doug, I can't wait to hear about how your first trip went, but we're going to save that discussion for our ops topic at the end of the show. Let's quickly hop on to the news brief so we can move on to our ops topic. What's going on this week, Doug?
Yeah, this is from the Washington Post, Drew. Southwest cancels hundreds of flights over the weekend, citing bad weather and air traffic control issues. Southwest canceled more than 2,000 flights over the holiday weekend. Operational issues began in earnest on Saturday the 9th when 800 flights were canceled. These issues snowballed into Sunday as more than 1,000 flights, or 30% of the airline's schedule, were canceled. Cancellations continued into Monday and Tuesday as crews and planes were stuck out of position. Southwest released a statement on Sunday saying the cancellations were a result of weather challenges in Florida and were compounded by unexpected air traffic control issues in the same region. No other airlines reported similar disruptions over the weekend. American said they had 63 cancellations and United had 9. The FAA tweeted out on Sunday that, quote, no FAA air traffic shortages have been reported since Friday, a direct contradiction to statements made by Southwest. Rumors have swirled that the operational issues were related to pilot protests against the company's recently announced vaccine mandate. Though I can say pilots that I know have said that is absolutely not the case.
Okay.
And the Southwest Airline Pilots Association came out and denied this and said that they're aware of operational difficulties affecting the airline. We can say with confidence that our pilots are not participating in any official or unofficial job actions. Our pilots will continue to overcome management's poor planning, as well as any external operational challenges, and remain the most productive pilots in the world. Drew, before we discuss this, I want to say, when we landed in Nashville on Saturday night and we were walking to pick up our shuttle to the hotel, we didn't, at this point, we'd been flying all day. We weren't following the news or anything. We didn't know this was happening to Southwest. We walked past a Southwest crew sitting in like the hotel shuttle pickup area and said, "Hey guys, what's going on?" We were talking with them and they said, we can't get a hotel. Said, "Oh man, that's too bad." And you and I have talked about this on previous episodes.
Yeah.
And it was like, "Oh, you know, that's too bad." And then Sunday was when the news really started to break that they're having these operational issues, and it became apparent this crew probably wasn't supposed to be in Nashville or was stuck in Nashville, stuck out of place. And so I can see how something like this really would snowball.
Well, and also they have a lot of flights through Florida, all over the state, probably more than some of the other carriers. So maybe they're affected more adversely. That's what we know. We don't have anything for sure that if it's a job action. There are people that have turned it into some
crusade
conspiracy.
Conspiracy. Yeah.
Yeah. No, you mentioned what the FAA said. The FAA rarely gets very sassy, but I sense some sassiness in this.
Absolutely.
So this was, you mentioned part of it. They said, "No FAA air traffic staffing shortages have been reported since Friday. Flight delays and cancellations occurred for a few hours Friday PM due to widespread severe weather, military training, and limited staffing in one area of the Jacksonville en route center." Then they have a tag on that says, some airlines continue to experience scheduling challenges due to aircraft and crews being out of place, you know, but that's also factual. It just sounded like,
I think they were
reacting to being blamed for this. They're saying it's not all them.
Well, and Drew, here's the thing. It can happen to anyone. No airline is immune to something like this. We saw the Spirit issues in August. If there are thunderstorms going through Newark and Houston at the same time, United's going to get hit.
Yeah.
If there are thunderstorms going through Chicago and Dallas at the same time, American's going to get hit. Atlanta, Delta, like it literally could happen to anyone. And Southwest is a little bit more exposed to something like this because they are a point-to-point operator. They don't really have hubs per se.
Right. They don't have a good recovery plan.
Yeah. Marissa has flown Southwest primarily for work just because of their lenient change policy. Her 10 years that she has lived away from her home base and when she has to fly for work, Southwest has been the best for her to do that. But she's been frustrated many times because it's almost like a bus route, a bus service, because they have one airplane leave Miami in the morning and it ends up in Seattle in the evening, and it makes five different stops along the way. And if that particular plane gets delayed, they're just going to let that delay roll through that particular flight, so it doesn't hopefully affect the rest of the system.
Right.
Whereas hub operators, point to point, like Delta and Atlanta, hey, a plane is delayed inbound, they can just pull another crew, another plane, put it in, and then throw that plane on maintenance or whatever, and it minimizes the impacts. But because Southwest doesn't really have hubs where they can easily switch crews out, airplanes, whatever, you can see how this might snowball like this.
Yeah, that's a really good example of where the hub and spoke structure is better set up for recovery. Sure. Just another example, if we cancel a flight from Washington to San Francisco, it's not the end of the world, because now you have a litany of flights that you can put these people on, and that one flight canceling isn't going to disrupt the whole operation. But just as you said, that one flight on Southwest may have been making four stops. Now four flights are affected. So yeah, that's a really good point. I didn't think about that. All right, anything else on Southwest?
No, we'll be following this. I'm sure that the conspiracies will continue to abound. And unfortunately, I don't think this is the last time we're going to see it this year. Not saying with Southwest, but as we get in a couple of our later stories, they're talking about the holidays coming up.
Yeah.
And you mentioned how things were crazy at Washington this week.
Unfortunately,
I think that as we head into the winter now with weather in places and crews are stretched thin and airplane, we're going to run it hard again. like we did this summer.
Well, the Southwest CEO did say that they're looking to downsize their schedule going forward so this doesn't happen again. Seems like deja vu from a couple months ago where they already had a meltdown.
And they already did downsize their schedule.
All right, next story. Now let's go to the other side of the world. We haven't talked a lot about international airlines for a while, so this is a big story, Doug. So this is from the BBC. Air India, struggling national carrier sold to Tata Sons. India's national airline, owned by the government, was sold to the highest bidder at nearly $2.4 billion. As we mentioned on our Indian aviation episode last year, the Tata Group originally founded the airline in 1932, before it was taken over by the Indian government in 1953. Air India has been for sale for years and has racked up nearly $10 billion in losses. Despite the losses, the airline has lots of potential, including 130 planes, thousands of trained pilots and crew, and prized Heathrow slots. What a golden opportunity for the Tata company if they can make this work.
Oh, it absolutely is. I don't think it was in this article. I think it was another one that you had sent me, or I was doing some research on this.
Yeah,
the assets that Air India owns alone are worth $6.4 billion. The airplanes, wow. The real estate at the airports in India, these slots, mm-hmm. Heathrow slots are some of the most expensive slots in the world. The Tata Sons paid $2.4 billion for granted, it is a struggling airline, but its assets alone are worth $6.4 billion. Now, I do believe that Tata assumed the debt. So it's not just a, hey, we pay $2.4 billion and get a $6.4 billion return. However, the Tatas founded it.
Yeah.
That would be like, let's say your family founded some company that finally gets back in your hands and it's been struggling. Like, how much pride, how much effort, how much blood, sweat, and tears would you pump into that company knowing that that's your heirloom? Like, that is your family's
heritage.
That's
your legacy. Let me read what Ratan Tata, so this is the son, JRD Tata is the one who founded it in 1932. After they regained control, I'm just going to read this. So this is from Ratan Tata. He said, on an emotional note, Air India under the leadership of Mr. JRD Tata had at one time gained the reputation of being one of the most prestigious airlines in the world. Tata will have the opportunity of regaining the image and reputation it enjoyed in earlier years. Mr. JRD Tata would have been overjoyed if he was in our midst today. So there's a real sense of purpose now, right? And let me just look. So you and I, this is even before my time. I didn't know Air India was a great airline. I just thought it was substandard, you know?
Yeah. The stories you hear.
But yeah. Listen to this, Doug. So 1960, they were the first Asian carrier to fly jets. 1962, they were the first all-jet airline in the world.
Yeah.
1970, they got their 747 as soon as they could. They were one of the first 747 carriers. They were considered one of the world's finest airlines. They're saying that they had an all-jet fleet, and they used to compete with BOAC, which was the
precursor to British Airways. Yeah.
People preferred Air India because BOAC was still flying some props. But they said even when it was jet versus jet, they preferred Air India because there was more pampered service. Their most luxurious flights were over the transatlantic, and they had this Maharaja lounge on the upper deck, which was a bar and all that. So they're not going to get back to all, you know, that much luxury.
It's not going to be overnight, but yeah.
It's not going to be overnight, but the volume of traffic that goes to India that all these other carriers have taken, Singapore, all these Middle Eastern carriers, there's so much opportunity for this carrier to take some of that back.
Oh, absolutely. Well, and since Jet Airways collapsed in, what was it, 2018, 2019, Air India is the only long-haul international carrier in India.
Yeah, that's true.
Now, IndiGo flies internationally, regionally, but they don't have anything long-haul. Actually, I take that back. Vistara now is flying.
It's getting some long-haul.
Yeah, right? long-haul, but still, this is a golden opportunity. And India, like, look at the US. We have three large international carriers, long-haul global carriers. Look at Europe, Air France, KLM, Lufthansa, and British Airways. That whole region is smaller than the US. They're able to support that much traffic. India, a country of over a billion people, they should have more than one or two large international airlines. So there is room for an improved Air India. And I think that the fact that Vistara now is starting to get these international routes and 7/8 and everything, just like the US competition is good, Vistara spreading its wings like that is going to be good for Air India.
Well, you just raised a concern. So the Tata company is invested in Vistara. So will they fold Vistara into the new Air India? I think that they will. Speaking of Tata, I don't think people realize how big of a company this is. It's not just about transportation. They have an annual revenue of $106 billion in 2020, 750,000 employees. They make cars, trucks. They have a tea company. They forge steel. They sell insurance.
Yeah. It's like the Amazon of the US.
Yeah. So $106 billion in revenue. So now they're starting an airline. What do we say, Doug?
Yeah. How do you become a millionaire? Start as a billionaire and then start an airline.
And buy Air India.
Yeah.
Did you know that they own Land Rover?
No.
Jaguar Land Rover is owned by Tata.
Yeah, because I was going to say, I thought that Land Rover was owned by Jaguar. Interesting.
Yeah, they own the whole. Wow. Yeah, who would have known?
Yeah.
Oh, well, yeah.
Good for them.
So we'll follow the story. I kind of hope that they go back to that crazy livery where each window had like a palace.
Think Aladdin, the Aladdin palace. It's like each window had that over the window. Do they still? I think they still might.
They have a minimized version of it.
Okay.
And then there's some guy, you know, we talk about the Pan Am experience in LA where you can go to this studio in Burbank and you can board. It's like you're in the Pan Am experience.
Yeah.
There's a guy who's doing the Air India experience. It's an American guy and he has all the silverware and he has the seats and everything. It was on Sam Chewy has a YouTube video.
Yeah.
About it.
Yeah. Okay. I just looked it up. It looks like you're right. It is minimized, but every window does still have just a small palace, if you want to call it that. Yeah.
Yeah. So when they changed from the original, the palace windows and that classic look, they went to all white with a burgundy stripe on the tail and a gold, like an ambassadorial seal, right?
Yeah.
There was an outcry in India because they missed that classic livery.
Yeah.
So maybe they can bring that back. We'll see.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, moving on to our next two stories, which are quite alike, and it follows a little bit more what we talked about at the opening. Delta posts a $1.2 billion Q3 profit and touts holiday bookings. When you remove the federal aid that the airline received, the airline still posted a profit of just over $200 million. Its first profit since the pandemic began. Quarter two, Delta still posted a profit, but if you remove the government aid, it was a small loss. Delta is generally the first airline to report results, but this is a good sign as other airlines prepare to report in the next few weeks. Capacity in the quarter was 71% of 2019 levels, and it expects to reach 80% in the fourth quarter, which again, Drew, that this falls right along with what we talked about with American predicting 75%.
75%, yep, right in line.
Yeah. The airline also expects its busiest months in the COVID era in November and December, centered around holiday travel.
We've already talked about this, and we'll just bank on it, what we've been saying. The Delta variant is waning. Mm-hmm. Right. The only thing that could be another roadblock to climbing back to where we were in 2019 is another variant of the virus.
Mm-hmm.
So far, so good. But yeah, I mean, the airlines that are preparing for higher load factors are in a good position.
Yeah, absolutely.
That leads us into the next story, unless you have something else on.
No, we can talk about it more after the end of this story.
After this?
Yeah.
All right. So this is from Marketplace. Airlines looking for a lift from holiday travel. United announced it plans to operate over 3,500 daily domestic flights in December. This is the largest schedule since the start of the pandemic. Holiday flight searches are up 16% compared to the same time in 2019. Airline analyst Richard Abulafia said the industry is optimistic, but the Delta variant over the summer placed downward pressure on bookings. The summer experience really shows how quickly this can turn for better or worse, he said. Cases are falling in almost all places around the U.S., so potential customers are using airline websites to look for holiday travel. Passenger habits have changed during the pandemic, with many travelers booking. This is what we said. You know, we didn't expect heavy loads this weekend, as heavy as they were. So they're saying with many travelers booking tickets at the last minute rather than months in advance, something that has made scheduling difficult for the airlines.
Yeah, I think that this might be one of the big reasons, one of the many reasons why Southwest had that meltdown this weekend, is they probably were expecting to have capacity in the system so that if flights were canceled, they could put people on other airplanes. But then, as you mentioned, when I left Nashville on Sunday morning and we were oversold and we were delayed out of there because we had to figure out who wasn't going to be on the airplane, airlines weren't expecting this. I mean, think about your leisure travel pre-COVID and most other people. We would book months in advance. You get the cheapest.
Oh, yeah, of course. Especially for holidays.
Yeah, 6 months, 8 months, 9 months, whatever it is. People just really, for more, you know, better or worse, aren't doing that right now. They're waiting until 2, 3, 4 weeks. I think partially because they're waiting to see what travel restrictions might be in place at the places that they're going to. But also, hey, I found a great deal. Let's go. Let's do it this weekend. Yeah. You know?
Well, and it is last minute because I think I told you I booked my mom booked a ticket to come here for Thanksgiving. And it was a few weeks ago. And that is getting close to the holidays. It was still an awesome deal. I'm going to check back later. It's probably going up fast because I'm looking at her seat map on her plane and it's filling up.
Yeah. Well, and the 16%, the number that from the Marketplace article says holiday flight surges are up 16% compared to the same time in 2019. Right. Now, granted, a lot of holiday traffic in 2019 would have been booked already. But the fact that today on October 13th, or I guess the story was yesterday, whenever it was, that searches are up 16% over that record-breaking 2019 that we just talked about.
Oh, wow. And let me ask you a question, Doug. We're going to wait to talk about your flights in detail, but were any of your flights not full?
Every single flight, 100% capacity. In fact, my final flight, we had two jump seaters in the flight deck of a 737. Two pilots who were just trying to commute to work, and there was not even a seat open in the back for them. So there were four of us crammed in this tiny flight deck.
And this is a flight from hub to hub where there are several flights, but this is the one they could get on.
There was a 7-8 that went out right before us that they couldn't get on.
That's awesome.
How crazy is that? Well, just going back to the Delta results, I have a feeling, and I think I read that American, they report in a week and a half. They expect a loss this quarter, but it's going to be less than what they had projected at the end of Q2. So even with the Delta variant, American is seeing, hey, we think that the loss is going to be less than what we expected. United hasn't said anything yet. They report next week. Southwest reports next week. So we'll probably in a couple weeks, 2 or 3 weeks, do a deep dive and just look at how the airlines did in the quarter.
So there was another news story from United that came out just recently. They're high-fiving their employees. Everyone got a $1,000 bonus just to say thank you for getting the company through the pandemic, which is cool.
Yeah.
I think they're painting a plane that says being United.
Yeah, I think it was released yesterday. I saw on Twitter.
Yeah, so it's nice to see that. All that stuff. All right, before we get into our ops topic, we wanted to read a message from Cameron and answer some of his questions. He's listened to nearly every episode and likes the balance of news and coverage of our day-to-day lives in the aviation industry. He's looking at becoming a pilot and wants to know what the time commitment is and how to balance work life, especially when raising a family. You just got there, but what are your thoughts right now?
Yeah, I did just get here, but I also went through pilot training and flew in the military. And I can say that if he's married already, then his wife is probably in for a rude awakening if he starts to do this. If he's not married, not dating, whatever, find someone who you know will be okay with you being gone a lot. And it does take a lot of work. I told you, Drew, like I get home from a trip and I don't want to make this sound derogatory, but like my list of things that I have to do around the house is a mile long. Because I've been gone, you know, I've been.
Well, you're already paying the price because didn't you miss Poppy's birthday and you had to reschedule it for another day because you were going to be gone that.
Yeah, I missed Friday. It. Yeah, I was gone on the day of her birthday. So we're doing it in a couple of weeks. And that's where you have to be flexible. Your spouse has to be flexible. And luckily with me being in the military, moving a lot, being gone all the time, my kids, they understand it. And kids are resilient if they grow up in that. It definitely is a big time commitment, but I can tell you now, having gotten to the airlines and where I'm at, these down days are awesome. Yeah. It's a chance for me to mentally catch up because on my first trip, and we'll talk about it, it was just such go, go, go that I didn't even have a moment to stop and think about and just internalize everything that I had done on that trip. that's what these couple of days have been, that it's a nice mental break. It's a time for me to help get the house in order for when I leave again here in a day or two or 4 days or whatever it is. And to be able to help Marissa, help the kids get back above water before I leave again.
Yeah.
And so that I would say that the best advice that I can give is find a spouse who is open for that, because I can tell you the divorce rate for pilots is one of the highest from a profession standpoint.
Well, and the other thing to think about in these relationships is for your wife or significant other, the end run, you know, the second part of your career, it's so luxurious, right? Because you're going to be able to pick your trips. You're going to be able to have holidays off. You're going to have a lot of time home with your family, and you can give away trips to pilots that want to pick them up. Right, Doug? So you can work as much or as little as you want.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm biased, and I have an awesome family, an awesome support system. I love my job. So of course I'm going to say, do it if you're interested in it, but just know it's not all rainbows and unicorns and butterflies. Like there definitely is a lot of stress and pain and suffering that your family goes through.
Yeah. So Cameron also asked about working in operations. That lifestyle is not for you, Cameron. There's so much stuff you could do in the airlines, and you could do the job that I do, where you're working with all kinds of departments. It's a very dynamic environment. So maybe that's what you want to go to. So you'll be less travel. You're still going to have to probably work weekends until you gain enough seniority. But if you want a little bit more stability, that's a way to go. And then if you want a lot of stability, go to corporate and you're going to have weekends off.
Yeah. Well, and the weekend off thing, I mean, Drew, I can tell you, as much as I would love to have the weekends off, the fact that I was gone on the weekend and I'm home during the week, I can bring the kids to school. I can pick them up.
There's advantages.
Marissa can start working earlier in the day. She can work later in the day. And so, yeah, I'm gone on the weekends, but I'm home to be able to do the school drop off and pick up and get lunches ready and all that. Yeah.
So there's advantages. I mean,
to everything.
Well, we're both off Wednesday and Thursday. And how nice is it to be able to go to the grocery store, go to the mail, the post office, and there's no crowds?
Yeah, exactly.
You can get all that stuff done.
Yeah, I'm going to James Bond at noon tomorrow with myself on a Thursday.
That's great.
Yeah.
A little daddy's time out.
Yeah. and you can't do that if you work the weekends or if you don't work the weekends, you know.
Can we get to the main topic?
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So everyone, Doug had his first trip and you were IOE. I don't know if all the airlines use that, but it's what does it stand for?
Initial operating experience. And most airlines do use it. If they don't say IOE, they say OE, operating experience. It's a check ride, a long trip that you're with an evaluator.
Yeah. So in operations, we're all about, you know, a lot, not as much as we used to, but we're about on-time performance because we want all these flights to leave on time. That's how we're rated. You know, how are we pushing these airplanes? And we'll see a flight. It's departure time. We don't see the beacon. The brakes aren't released. I'm like, what's going on? There's nothing wrong. This flight, it's closed up early. Then we find out it's an IOE pilot. It's one of you. And then we're like, everyone's like, yeah, no. Take as long as they need.
Yeah.
Everyone understands, you know, first day on the job, how harrowing it is. So we don't want you to be rushed. Okay. Now, can I lay up for everyone what your routing was?
Yeah.
Okay. So Doug had an awesome routing where you got to see hubs. You got to see smaller cities, two cities you haven't been to. So Doug went from SFO, San Francisco, to Denver, Denver to Boston, overnight in Boston, which you've never been to Boston. Boston to Dulles, where I got to see you. We had a whole to do with the departure screen.
Yeah, which I'll talk about. Yeah.
All right. So it came through Dulles. I got to see him and do all the fanfare, filmed your plane landing and all that good stuff. Then you took off. You went to Nashville for the night, spent the night there, back to Dulles. So I got to see you again. I got to have lunch with you and your training captain. Awesome guy. We could have sat there and talked forever. And then you did a 6-hour flight. Is it 6 hours?
It was like 5.5. Yeah.
5.5-hour flight on a 737 from Washington Dulles to Los Angeles.
Yeah. Transcon.
Yeah. All right. So walk us through it.
Overnight LA, then I did LA, Houston, back to San Fran to finish out the trip.
Now, do you want me to ask you questions? Because I have a few questions.
So as I talked about that, I had some time to just decompress and think about it. I've got a couple notes that I think you'll probably, some things you'll laugh at. So we can kind of, I guess, start in San Fran and then whatever questions come up.
Let's start.
Feel free to interject. My pairing started, the flight was at 10:50 Friday morning. So it was a late morning departure. Normally we show up for the first flight of a pairing 90 minutes early. And we get to meet the captain we're flying with, brief up the trip and whatnot. But because it was OE, it was 2 hours early. So I had to be there at 8:50. Mm-hmm. I didn't know what the traffic situation was going to be getting into San Fran. So I left home really early, like 5 o'clock, 5:30, something like that. Didn't really hit traffic, but Drew, I'll tell you, that entire drive, I was so nervous for going in. I almost felt like I was going to throw up.
Yeah, because it's
nervous. And it wasn't necessarily about I was nervous for the flight. It was more I had never parked in the crew parking lot. I had never walked to the terminal from the crew parking lot. I'd never walked through the terminal in uniform. I had never gone through a known crew member in uniform. Like, it was just all these unknowns that were just building and building and building.
Right.
And it was like, once I finally parked, it's like the nerves started to go away because, okay, I'm here. Time to go, time to get to work. Let's do this. Met Dan, my LOE, my line check airman for my OE trip. Awesome guy. He's a new listener. So, hey, Dan, thanks for the great.
What was cool, Doug, is he reached out to you before the flight to talk to you, get to know you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So really great guy. I'll tell you, Drew, we're in the chief pilot office in San Francisco, which is underneath one of the terminals, giant windows everywhere. Mm-hmm. And he's briefing me and asking questions and whatever before we went to the airplane. I was so distracted by the eye candy taxiing behind me.
No.
The ANA BB-8 777 went by, a bunch of other 7As, 777s. Yeah. And he's sitting in front of the window looking at me, and I'm looking at him with the windows behind. In my mind, I was like, I kind of wish we had done this differently where I wasn't looking out the window
wanting to take pictures while everyone else is there to start their shift and go to work.
Yeah, exactly.
Which you should be
exactly
in that mode.
Exactly. Yeah.
How did you feel? Okay. So how many times did you have to pinch yourself when you were walking through the terminal in your pilot uniform?
Every single time I felt like, I don't even know how to describe it. I felt so uncomfortable.
Huh?
Because I knew everyone's eyes were on me, and I wasn't used to that. Like, I mean, you walk through the terminal as a passenger and you see the pilots, and everyone turns to look because they're walking through the terminal.
They're the nicest dressed.
Yeah. And so that it was just weird and uncomfortable, but I'll tell you, I did pick up a bunch of cards, like the airplane cards, and I handed them out to kids in the terminal leaving the airplane. Cause I remember that as a kid getting those.
They love that.
Yeah. And so to me, it was like, that kind of breaks the tension, breaks the ice.
A little information about that. So we learned, you know, when we go to these classes for customer service and, you know, how to take care of our customers. Do you know that customers like it more when you show attention to their children than to them?
Mm-hmm. Or if they're traveling,
Or if they're traveling with their mother or their grandparents, if you show their grandparents attention, they prefer that more than you giving them attention.
Because
they really appreciate that.
Well, one of the flights, I don't even remember which one it was. I came back from doing the walk around, got back on the jetway, and they had started boarding, and there was a mother traveling with two kids by herself trying to break down the stroller. Mm-hmm. I said, can I get that for you? Because I know Marissa has traveled with both the kids by herself, and it's tough. Like, you're trying to corral your kids, and she's like, yes, please, that would be great. So I, you know, broke it down and set it by the door and everything. Cause I know I've been there.
And I mean, when the crew members are helping in the terminal, whether it's a flight attendant or a pilot, I remember we were flying Korean, and I remember the pilot was also coming off and helping my mom with her carry-on.
Mm-hmm.
And she still talks about that.
Yeah. Yeah. You
know, it's just a little thing.
Yeah, it leaves a mark. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So we got on the plane, we pre-flighted. That was all fine. I'd done that a million times in the sim. It was just kind of knocking the rust off. We had a runway change in San Fran 3 times, which was good because I got to see how to reload it in the box and everything. Took off. I was the pilot monitoring on the first flight just so I could see basically how he's flying and get a feel for it. We get to level off Drew and he hands me the mic and goes, okay, I'm turning the seatbelt sign off. Welcome them.
So, oh my God. Well, you have experience from doing this podcast, so I'm sure it sounded really smooth.
Yeah. And he's over there and like out of the corner of my eye. So I'm reading the arrival weather and looking at the box, seeing how much longer we have. We already knew the gate that we were going into. And so, you know, everyone's who listens to this podcast has flown. So I've flown a bunch too. So I gave, you know, my best spiel as I could. And I see out of the corner of my eye, he's over here with his camera, like taking pictures of me, and I'm trying not to laugh. And
we're probably gonna post that on this.
Yeah, the show it was awesome. I mean, there was
something else you missed. So when you boarded this first flight, what comment did the flight attendant make?
Oh yeah. Dan, my line check airman, says to the flight attendant, "Hey guys, you know I'm Dan. This is Doug." Because we don't know that, like, I probably in my career will never fly with those flight attendants again, because it's just such a big group. I may never fly with Dan again.
Yeah, just that's so it's weird.
Such
to
me. A big group of employees. Yeah. And he says to them, yeah, this is Doug. This is his first day working. And the flight attendant goes, ha, yeah. Is that a joke? And he's like, no, this is his first flight. And she's like, oh. Okay. I thought you were joking, and walked away. And we looked at each other like, what does that mean? Like, is that good? Is that bad?
Did that flight attendant crew stay with you all the way to Boston?
No, but in Denver, I don't know if one of her coworkers said something to her, if she saw our facial expressions, but after we landed, she was like, hey, you know, really, really great flight. Great flying with you. Congrats. Welcome to the company. Good luck in your career.
Yeah.
But it was kind of like, oh boy. Okay.
So, all right. So you're flying to Denver. Did you do any part of the flying on this first segment?
No, not in the first segment. I was the pilot monitoring the whole time.
How were you feeling? Were you feeling like you wanted to take the controls? And
no, I was glad that I didn't, because it was like one final knock the rust off and watch him do everything. Like, of course I ran the checklist and talked on the radios, which I've done a million times. No, I was glad. And he was teaching the whole time. Even he was talking through the takeoff, through the climb, through the arrival, through the landing. But like I do to my students teaching at the schoolhouse.
That's right.
Yeah. And so that was really good, which then helped set me up for the rest of the trip and a bigger comfort level.
How similar to the simulator was the actual plane?
Easier. Yeah. Yeah, just like
the DC-10.
Yep. Just like the DC-10, it was easier to fly. Yeah, sims do a really good job of setting up the procedures. The flying, not as much. Like it still is a lot better than it was 15, 20, 30 years ago. But right. No, the flying was a lot easier. So we get to Denver. That's totally fine. We have a long sit there. It was like 3 hours. So Dan and I talked most of the layover, just about what to expect for the rest of the trip and everything. And then the flight to Boston. And this is awesome. I just want to shout out to our friends, Greg and Nate and Tyler. It was really cool landing in Denver, and my mom too, and some of my other friends getting screenshots of Flight Radar 24 and Flight Aware.
Yep, they're watching.
The people were watching. And that really made me feel good that there's this support network of people who are excited and following along with me.
Well, that's what they say. You're not AvGeek friends unless you're stalking each other's flights.
Oh, absolutely. Right. Yeah. And this is the first time that I was actually flying the plane that was being stalked.
But yeah. And I was working. So I was like glancing. It's like, oh, all right. He's left on time. He's landing. Yeah. It's
cool. Really uneventful. The flight to Boston, I flew the whole leg, but I do want to talk about that landing in Boston. This is my first time landing the airplane. I've landed in the sim, but this is my first time landing the airplane.
Before that, you also went through some turbulence between Denver and Boston over the Midwest.
Like half the flight was turbulent. We had to sit the flight attendants down several times. We had to pick through thunderstorms over Lake Ontario. Or no, it was Lake Erie. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was, but that goes back to just aviation and aviation knowledge. And I've done that in the 10 for the last 10 years. So that wasn't really anything too terribly crazy. It was just more, I had to think about the people in the back, because I'm used to flying gas in boxes, not 180 paying passengers going from Denver to Boston.
And not a drink card in the aisle and all that.
Yeah, exactly. Arrival into Boston. This is crazy. First time landing this airplane. It's night. It's instrument conditions almost down to minimums. The runway was wet. crosswinds, new airplane, new airport, and we break out of the clouds and we're like 1,000 feet above the runway. And I brought it in and I flared it like a KC-10.
Oh no.
And he's like, get the nose down. And so I did, and he's like, airspeed. And then I just absolutely smashed this airplane onto the runway.
Oh. Well, you got to stick that landing because it's wet. You got to put it down firmly.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Well, I can tell you my landings got a lot better as the trip went along.
Well, yeah. So I filmed your next landing at Dulles. It was pretty good.
Yeah.
I thought it was good. I didn't see any bounce.
No, each landing definitely got a lot better.
Yeah, no, as far as flaring, you know how, so for the listeners, on a 737, the tail is really long on the 800s and the 900s. Mm-hmm. So you can't flare like you would your previous plane, which is the DC-10. So you have to fly faster and it's got to be a pretty firm, fast touchdown.
Right? Yeah, because the 7.3, the 8 and the 9s, the 800, 900s are prone to tail strikes. So we really have to be careful about that. And kudos to my line check airman for trusting me in not messing something up that would possibly get us into a tail strike.
Situation. And he did intervene when he saw something that could be an issue. That's
awesome. He didn't intervene in like taking the airplane, but he was talking me through it. And it got to the point where the last couple landings, he wasn't saying a thing, which was great. Cause that made me feel like, okay, I'm finally getting this. I'm finally getting there. So overnight in Boston. And this was cool, Drew. I went for a run the morning after we got in because we had a little time before we had to be back at the airport. Boston Marathon is normally in March, but because of COVID, they moved it to October this year. And I'd totally forgotten that it was this weekend. So I'm out running around. I saw the Boston Marathon finish line. I got to run part of the course through downtown Boston, and there were runners everywhere. And it was just so cool to be part of that experience as someone who's done marathons and things like that before.
And you got a beautiful day in Boston. It was cloudy here, but it was sunny.
It was gorgeous. Yeah, it was absolutely gorgeous. So we flew down to Dulles, and I don't think I told you this, when we landed and pulled into the gate, there was a sign that you had organized. So I appreciate it. That said, welcome to the big leagues, Doug. I didn't even see it. And my line check airman goes, oh, look at this, man. He set you up. And I was like, what are you talking about? He's like, look at the sign in front of us. Cause I was just, my focus was like, I was looking through the whole, I would say the first probably 2 days of the trip, I felt like I was looking through a straw, just my situational awareness.
Tunnel vision,
absolute tunnel vision. And finally, the aperture got wider and wider by the last flight, which we don't really need to talk about too many of the intermediate flights. It was just so cool to see that, and then to see you and get pictures and everything was just really cool.
So. Yeah, it was so, you know, it was so surreal because we've been friends since we've been doing this podcast. And, you know, we're Av Geeks, and to have you working for the same company and flying into my airport and walking around with you or meeting you at the airport, and it was so weird.
Yeah.
Surreal. I mean,
surreal is the best way.
I mean, this is episode 99. Think of everything that you and I have been through to get to this point where my job is great and I'm looking at other opportunities possibly within the company. You've started your dream job. And you got the base that you wanted. You got a great aircraft, and you might be going to another one already. Things are turning, you know, things are doing pretty well. I'm saying this, I know that, you know, there are some of us out there that are still looking for work. So just stay positive, like we always did, right? Even during the depths of COVID, we just have to stay aviation tough.
That's why we came up with that saying. And hearing Laura last week say it was Laura who said that she's been with us since Aviation Tough.
Yeah.
That's great to hear. And it makes us feel like we're actually making a positive impact on people.
Well, and John DeBray, we brought him on because he sent us a comment saying, you know, we went through some tough, he's a flight instructor in Phoenix.
Yeah.
And he would say our episodes kept him going because he's a young guy looking for an aviation career, and COVID-19 happens and all his students from Asia are gone. Mm-hmm. Right. And he said that's one of the only things that kept him going when you said at the end of the show, stay aviation tough.
Mm-hmm.
And guess what? What happened last month with John? He got a job.
Exactly.
In the airlines.
Yep.
Close to the time that you did.
So. At a regional. Yep. Exactly.
Yeah.
All right. We don't have to talk about the all the other flights. I do want to talk about my last flight. So first of all, Nashville was really cool. Good layover. Got to LA at, we landed at like 5:30, Drew. And I know I talked about going to the In-N-Out. We got to the hotel and Dan said, hey, I'm just going to grab a burger in the hotel bar and then go to bed. And I said, no, I'm going to walk to the In-N-Out. I really want to go just watch the airplanes. By the time I got there, the sun had already gone down over the horizon. So I only got like 10 minutes, took a couple pictures and then went back and went to bed. But still, I mean, that's the ab geek in me that I'll take a 20-minute walk to go to the In-N-Out to watch planes for 10 minutes and then walk back to the hotel before I sleep. I felt like I had to. I can't not be right by the airport and not go.
I know you got the In-N-Out burger, which you have to do, but you were at runway 25 and our airline lands on 24. So you need to change your whole perspective.
I was on.
Oh, that's right. 20. You were at 24. Okay.
24. Yeah. I considered going to the Proud Bird.
They're closed.
They're closed. They're open now, but only for like certain times of the day.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's why I went to the In-N-Out. Yeah.
The 25s. That's right. Cause further south. Okay.
Yeah. All right. So the final flight from Houston back to San Fran, Drew, this was the hardest landing of my career. When I put in the ATIS request,
that's saying a lot.
For those non-flying people, ATIS is the weather request for the field.
Automated.
So we're about to start the descent, request the ATIS on ACARS, and the weather comes up, and it was winds were 300 at 23 knots, gusting to 31. So it was like a quartering crosswind from the north because we were landing on the 28. So it wasn't quite down the pipe, but it also wasn't a direct cross, but still. So gusting to 31. We did the bridge visual into San Francisco runway 28 right. You guys can Google this, look it up. Comes over San Mateo Bay and then down into San Francisco. Drew, I've been in and out of San Fran quite a bit as a passenger. I've plane spotted there. I have never seen white caps as big as I saw on the bay. It was one of the worst wind days that I've seen at San Francisco.
Was it at least sunny?
It was sunny. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. But it was super turbulent. The entire arrival, the entire approach, super turbulent. And I felt bad for the passengers in the back. It's like, there's nothing we can do about this. It's not like we're avoiding turbulence at altitude. Like we're trying to get into the airport. That's their destination.
Right.
I hand flew it most of the way in just because the auto throttles had been surging. And I said, you know, I'm just going to click everything off, hand fly it in. Mm-hmm. And I absolutely greased it on.
Wow. That's great. At 35 knot crosswind
on. And just thinking back to 3 days prior on what was that Friday night, slamming it into Boston. And now I'm able to fly this super crazy approach into San Francisco. And I had a great landing.
That's
my
awesome.
My line check airman just had this big jovial smile and like hit me on the shoulder. It's like, dude, great job. Like that was awesome. So I really feel like in just 4 days, my growth as a pilot, as a 737 pilot operating for the airline, like, I just feel like I grew so much and learned so much.
In one trip, you were broken in.
I was broken in and I'm at the point now where I was 30 minutes short of finishing OE. So I have to do one more trip with the line check airman. Drew, I'm checking my phone every 15 minutes, excited because I want to get out there again. I want my next trip. Whereas last week, I was checking my phone, nervously anticipating that trip. And it's at the point now where I'm like, come on, give me a trip.
Let me ask you a question. Yeah. So now you're broken in. You did an awesome final landing. Do you feel as comfortable on the 737 as on the DC-10?
Absolutely not. No, it's way too soon. No, I mean, the DC-10 I flew for 10, or I still fly. I haven't flown since I got to the airline and I probably won't fly for a couple months still, but I mean, you're on an airplane for 10 years. It's going to take a long time, I think, before I get to that.
How did it feel sitting in the right seat?
It was fine because I sit in the right seat a lot on the 10.
Okay.
As an instructor, if I'm flying with a captain upgrade, I'm in the right seat.
Do you have a preference?
No, not really.
That's because pretty good. You're ambidextrous.
I've spent half the time in each seat. No, not really.
Okay. And one more very important question. You had how many legs? I think it was, let's see, six altogether.
Eight altogether.
Mm-hmm. Did you have chicken orzo on every single flight.
Oh yeah, the
and turn food. It down.
No, we have to talk about the food. The menu is drastically improved since I did my jumpsuit rides.
Right. You sent me pictures.
Yeah, some sort of a pot roast on one of the flights with like a potato side. I had a steak on another flight. The breakfast was really good. No, the food was excellent. I did fly the Max twice on Monday. Drew, what an amazing airplane.
How is it? Is it that different
from
the NG?
Yes, absolutely. It is just so much smoother. It flies like a heavy. Just so much smoother. And those screens are enormous.
Yeah, it takes up the whole expanse. Like there's only four big screens, right? I mean, that's your dashboard. That's it. That's almost everything.
I mean, the overhead panel, and we joked about it, is identical to the 737-100 from 50 years ago.
Yeah.
But beyond that, no, it is an amazing airplane, a joy to fly, and it was great.
Wow, that's great that was your last flight on that. Yeah. So, I mean, they're getting more and more, so more chance you'll be able to fly them. I mean, there's a 737-8 MAX coming out of the factory, it seems like every week.
Mm-hmm.
Like pancakes at the Alaska Airlines lounge. Plop, plop, plop.
That brings me back to that video that we got.
Why was that so? It was so dumb.
I think it was so early. It's funny.
All right, guys. Before we go, we just have to give a quick shout out to our buddy Jason from Spokane. Jason is a lifelong firefighter and just informed us that he has an upcoming interview as a flight attendant. Best of luck, Jason. And hopefully we had something to do with your decision to join the industry.
Yeah, good luck, Jason. We're really excited to know this. We know that you'll do great. We received more great feedback from Chris in New Zealand. He said, "G'day, Doug and Drew. Just wanted to say I loved listening to Boarding Pass 98 with Laura. Great combo of ops, pilot, and flight attendant. Really interesting having Laura at her perspective." He went on to say how much he likes flying premium economy, which we talked about in that episode. He always uses it for trans-Pacific flights and can't wait to begin traveling again. He's also very jealous of all of our flying that we've been doing. So sorry to our international listeners who still aren't able to travel. Hopefully you'll be able to just around the corner.
Okay. So there's another promotion of premium economy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Great product. All right. So I got the negative feedback. So we believe it or not, we've shared some negative feedback on this call, I think. But this one, I got a list of items that were negative about our last episode.
Yeah, let's just shotgun it. You read them.
Let's just shotgun. So, you know, he really...
Well, okay, who's this from? I don't think...
Oh, this is from Henry, who gives us a lot of content. He's a real character. We call him our troublemaker because he loves to stir the pot. And he's a great guy. So he's
Which is good, though.
It's good. We love it.
Is good content that we can talk about.
Yeah. So I don't know. I think I talked to you about you're going to the In-N-Out Burger and, mm-hmm. you know, get your double char or whatever they call it. And he corrected me. It's called the double-double. Did you know that?
No.
I guess that's important because that's the Av Geek Hangout. I should know.
Yeah. Right. It's a double-double.
All right. So duly noted, double-double at the In-N-Out. That's what the Av Geeks are supposed to get. And then he said, your Av Geek card is being revoked after that and not non-revving on a 747. Which on the last episode with Laura, when I work for America West, I never non-revved on the 47 to Hawaii.
I don't think we revoke your card. You did subtract points.
Yeah.
Yeah. You subtracted points. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause I was going to school. I was poor. You know, I can't just fly off to Hawaii.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if we're going to revoke your AvGeek card.
Yeah.
I just finished listening to Tyler and Moe's latest episode.
Okay.
Tyler once again claimed or I guess owned up to the fact that he has never ever not once flown on a 747.
Oh, that is a lot of minus points.
Yeah.
That's the queen. We should probably get him on that Lufthansa 748.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. All right, then little troublemaker Henry said, and you didn't mention getting fish and chips in London. The point that I was making about London, it's not just British, it's very multicultural and you can get all kinds of food.
Yeah.
But yes, that's a good point. I'm not dismissing the great, I can't even believe I'm saying, because London was known for bad food when in the 80s and 90s, but now it's really good.
We didn't talk about bangers and mash either, or haggis.
Well, that's what he's saying. It's like you didn't mention getting fish and chips in London, which is great. I have had fish and chips in London, so definitely have that there. Then he said, how am I going to press the call button if I am dead, though? I don't understand that. We never said that you were dead when you're... Because he said he wouldn't press the call button unless... Well,
that was, yeah, that was a quote you said when you quoted him last week. You said that he said, "How many, or I'm not going to press it unless I'm dead." So he said that, I think. I
was just reading,
reading his comment. Yeah.
And then he said, "You talked about the other cuisines of London, but not the classic fish and chips. Would have given you bonus points for bangers and mash and Yorkies." What's a Yorkie?
I don't know what a Yorkie is, but
it's probably some kind of sausage. And what else?
I will give Henry credit. When I was editing the episode and I listened to us talking about London food, in my mind, I was like, man, why didn't we mention bangers and mash?
I know.
So I did think about it.
Right. No. So this is, I don't want to say a correction. It's good feedback. It's good feedback. Yeah. I love bangers and mash, fish and chips. I'm just saying that there's that and a lot of food.
Yeah.
Other stuff. So.
Oh, some of the best gyros and shawarma I've ever gotten. I got in London.
Right. Exactly.
Great Middle Eastern food. Yeah.
And then he's talking about, then he gets too far and I can't even legally have blood pudding over here. And he said, well, it's really just, it's black pudding. It's pretty much all blood though. No, thanks.
Yeah. I'll stick to eating liver if I want blood pudding. No, that's good. Thanks for the feedback, Henry. We give you grief, but we really do appreciate it. So keep it coming. Everyone else too, please. We want content. We want feedback. Please give it to us. But we're going to end on a positive note after Henry's feedback. Right, Drew?
We just
received a great 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. And what did it say?
Oh, yeah. So this one we just got today or yesterday said, "Doug and Drew are one of the best co-host teams I've listened to over the past few years. These guys are informative, entertaining, and funny. I've learned so much about the airline industry and airplanes from listening to their podcast, and I know you will too. I'd love to have you both on my podcast to talk about airline travel." It's a she, right?
Mm-hmm. She's got a podcast. I can't pronounce her name, so I apologize. Yeah.
So she's got a podcast called Travel Gluten Free. We'll have to check it out. And Doug, let's be on it. I mean, it's about food. We love food.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, I looked into it this morning, so I'm going to try and listen to it back and forth, picking up the kids this afternoon. Well, to our listeners, this podcast is your show, so go on our website, nexttripnetwork.com, and let us know what's on your mind so we can talk about it or give us your feedback. Be sure to check out this week's episode featuring probably some photos from my trip. You can also follow us on Twitter or Instagram at Next Trip Podcast. Please let your friends know about us so we can reach more people who love aviation and travel.
Doug, guess which episode is next?
100. I cannot 100. Believe it. Yeah.
Yeah. So we're going to have, it'll be special. We won't tell you what it is, but then we're not going to be done there. We're going to have an extra section to celebrate our 100th episode. So we'll talk about that as soon as we iron out.
2 weeks from today.
Yeah.
The recording of that
extra. I'm actually really excited about the AvGeek extra section. So we're wondering, do you want to tell them a little bit about it?
I don't know. I'm more excited now that we got that second leg, or I guess that third.
Yeah, leg. Everything's coming together.
Yeah, because I had looked and it still hadn't cleared. And I was like, oh man, it still hasn't cleared. But yeah, it cleared this morning. So it would have been fun either way. But I'm more excited now that third leg cleared.
Right, because you were obsessively checking that, I'm sure, as was
I had been before the trip, and I hadn't looked since I got back. Yeah.
So this trip is going to have a lot of our favorite things that we've discussed throughout the year, and it's wide body transcon. Check. A lot of us and our friends have been to New York because to get a wide body transcon, that's the place to be. So it includes New York.
Great food.
Lounges.
first class
premium economy. And I always said I wanted to do one of these marathon trips, so after it's we're gonna do this whole trip in what, 24 hours?
Yep. 26.
I think it's more than 24. I think it's
26.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting. And I think, Doug, what we're gonna do, and the listeners, you know, give us feedback on this, I think that we just tape the episode real time. We tape the episode real time. Like, how are we feeling before? Because we're going to be all energized and happy. And then throughout the trip, where does our energy level go? Because we're going to try not to sleep. I'm not going to be able to sleep on a trip on a 777 transcon. I might
take like a 30-minute nap before we start descending, just to get into a good, energy state before going into the city.
I don't even know how you do that. I cannot. We'll get myself a nap.
We'll get coffee at the club, and then walking around New York will definitely wake us up. And then after lunch on the second flight, so on the first flight on our way back west, probably take a quick nap. I don't know. We'll see.
We're gonna do like a 2-hour walk in New York, which is gonna be awesome. So we're just gonna walk up. Yeah. It's gonna wake us up. Well, we'll see. We might be dead tired to the point where I got to get a hotel room just to like lay down.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Which reminds me of when, just real quick story, when I had to go to Frankfurt for a meeting. So I went the day before.
Yeah. And you talked about this. Yeah.
My coworker showed up that day. So they got off the flight from the East Coast and we did the tour with Lufthansa. And I remember one of my coworkers saying, when they were describing the bag belt system, she said, "Can I just lay down on this bag belt right now and go to sleep?"
on a work trip.
On a work trip. Yeah. So that's going to be us. We're going to be like, "Can I just lay on this park bench in Central Park and just sleep?"
Yeah.
So I think we will. I think we should tape real time exactly how we're feeling to see if it's doable to do a 24-hour AvGeek trip with no hotel.
Mm-hmm.
And the young Av geeks would like it because they're going to save $200 on a hotel room.
Yeah, I think I'll be able to do it because I've done flights like that where I'm up for 24 hours. So I think what I'm probably going to do, because I don't have to leave for the airport until about 7 that night, our flight's at 10. I probably will take some like get the kids to school, take some sort of sleep aid and try and sleep several hours through the day.
Oh, that's smart. So I was also thinking about it this way. Yeah. So our flight leaves at 10 p.m.
Yeah. It's like 9:55 or 10. Yeah.
Right. So let's say it's 10 p.m. So that would be 1 a.m. East Coast time. Mm-hmm. It's not really morning though. Cause I'm thinking, okay, I could conceivably be waking up, but no, I wouldn't. It's 1 a.m.
No, not that. Yeah.
we should do what Lara does and just keep ourselves in the moment.
Yeah. But here's the thing on that transcon, we'll get dinner, we'll get drinks. And then the service will probably start to wane a little bit throughout the night. That could be a window to just get a quick hour of shut eye. And we'll be in premium economy, as Lara said. We'll have the leg rest, the big recline. We're checking that off.
I just realized we're checking that box too because we love premium economy as a product.
And we're in the last row, so we don't have to worry about reclining into someone else because we have the bulkhead behind us. So I think once the service slows down, that's probably a window to get a little bit.
Yeah,
we'll see. Yeah.
Well, and then you're talking about the trip back. Who cares? We're in first class in these huge recliner seats.
Three flights. Yep.
Three flights.
First class cleared all three. Mm-hmm.
And we're flying Delta.
Yep.
Right. And Delta has just started serving hot meals. You said
they've started serving meals. I don't know if it's hot. But I read that it is no longer the snack box. Actually, my dad, I'll ask him because he's on a trip right now and he.
Or don't ask him and we'll just be surprised.
Yeah, that we could do that too. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Thanks to all of our listeners for your support and for joining the conversation. We'll see you next week. And in the meantime, stay aviation tough.
This has been the Next Trip Podcast. Visit nexttripnetwork.com for information about previous episodes, trip reviews, aviation photos, and other aviation related content. This is your show, so search for The Next Trip on Twitter and let Doug and Drew know what you want to talk about. Not on Twitter? You can also email them at nexttrip.podcast@gmail.com. Please consider leaving a review wherever you download your podcasts. It will help other listeners like you discover this show.
Before we go, we have to give a quick shout out to our buddy Jason from Spokane. Spokane is a lifelong firefighter and
Jason is a lifelong firefighter. You said Spokane is a lifelong firefighter.